Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are at the most efficient way to listen to the podcast by entering Warman Kickfighting Show into your iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. So today is a special edition of the show. I'm going to go all out. I even did a little bit of a write-up for Liverkick.com, but I'm going to talk about the phenomenon that just took place 10 years ago, and that was the Contender Asia Series, and it was one of the bigger moments in my 10 years as far as really following and being in love with kickboxing and Muay Thai. It's one of the bigger moments in the world for the kickboxing sport and for Muay Thai, and it just gave kickfighting, like, it gave it a feel like a really big high promotion feel outside of your fight promotion. So if you watch the K1 Max show, you know you saw the highest level of promotion behind a show. If you watch the K1 World Grand Prix, you know you saw the highest level of kickboxing. In that way, this show was a major run television product that was pushed throughout several countries all over the world, and people really got behind the stars and the athletes that competed in it, and it really was a big deal. So I will go ahead and go into the story of this full. I'm going to tell you why the Contender Asia was so special. First and foremost, it starts off with Mark Burnett, who is the creator of a show called The Contender. And The Contender was a show where Sylvester Stallone got together with, world champion boxer Sugar Ray Leonard, and they would put together some of the better boxers in the country. Not elite boxers, but good boxers. I think that's the thing that made it really work. It would have been different if they had a whole bunch of world-class, already world champions, kind of like the Super Six did in boxing. But instead, what they did was they got guys who had good records from just different places all over the country. One guy's from Minnesota, I remember, and they built the show, and I'll never forget when I first heard about it. I saw the commercial, and there was a guy who I was training with at the time. He said, "Hey, I'm going to run home because I know one of the guys fighting on that TV show." So the first one got good ratings and had a good following, and they had this music. The Contender music followed it, and then after this kind of epic, Hans Zimmer type music, the show went on, and the first season was successful. Second season, not as much, but okay. And then they kind of continued to do it for three or four total seasons. But the thing that it did was it made people look at combat sports in a different way. It made them look at a weekly tournament where you got to know the athletes outside of just in an interview and in a what they do as far as the resume, how they do when they compete. So it made people look at it differently. The Ultimate Fighting Championship, they then, took that idea and ran with a show called The Ultimate Fighter. Of course, you guys know The Ultimate Fighter was the show that really helped to turn the mixed martial arts into a acceptable household, brand. Like, it went from being kind of, no holds barred to some rule changes and some champions, but like that show really helped it. It was in the negatives until that show helped turn the ratings around and turn the product around in general. So it started off with The Contender, and then The Ultimate Fighter took that idea. Burnett, looking to put that product, create that product again, was looking to do it in a different place. And he decided that he was going to do this with Muay Thai, because Muay Thai, of course, Muay Thai and kickboxing much bigger in Asia and Oceania at the time. That's just the way the market was for television. So all of a sudden, this preview emerges, or this trailer emerges for the show. So really, this starts as far as where it really takes off as far as how the public conscience goes. This trailer pops up on YouTube and on the fight forums. Now, this is, we're talking 2007, 2006, I'd say, was when this trailer first started to surface. And basically what it is the Contender music, and then it shows some of the better fighters in the world. Sanjay appears in it, Yotsen Klai appears in it, Ole Larsen appears in it. Like, it's got epic music, and you hear that they're going to do the Contender. And right away, everyone's excited. This is before Twitter. This is before Instagram. Facebook is out there, but it's not what Facebook is today. The way we existed in kickboxing and in Muay Thai was we existed on the fight forums. So people who think Muay Thai and kickboxing is down right now, it's because they put so much, they invested so much into the fight forums that once those went away, they assumed that the sport went away, that it wasn't the same. But in truth, right now, in today's market, there are more kickboxers getting paid, pretty solid purses, way more today than there was in what people would call the heyday of kickboxing and Muay Thai. But the difference is the attention to it, it's more spread out. So it's a little bit different. But when this came out, this is something that popped up on the fight forum. So K1 Fans, of course, was a big one. K1 USA and Kakutugi, those are probably the big three in the world. And no disrespect if you're another big kickboxing forum out there and I didn't mention you, but those are the big three that really emerged. So when this trailer popped out and people were watching this clip, one thing that I realized was it was one of the first YouTube clips that was acceptable. For us, everything had to be something that you could download or upload. So basically, if you were a K1 fans, for example, go to K1 fans. If the K1 show happened, there'd be a sign that said K1 videos, no spoilers, or K1 Max 2000, 8 videos, no spoilers. And then you go in there, and then there's like SendSpace and Mega Upload were these sites where you could download and upload videos. And if you didn't upload a video and you just took videos, they called you a leecher. And the biggest crime was if you were a leecher and you complained. So if you were like, hey, all the fights were up, but this fight's not up, and you haven't posted any fights, nobody would pay attention to you. You were like less than dirt in the kickboxing forums. But if anybody posted YouTube videos back when I first got into the fight forums, it was something that people said, stop doing it. Stop putting on YouTube. It's like it wasn't an acceptable form because YouTube, what it is today, like people would never imagine that people had the perception of that in the fight forums. But at this period of time, people didn't accept the YouTube ones. They wanted something that they could download and have on their hard drive, have on their PCs. Until this video popped up. When this video popped up, people were completely fine with playing this, 90-second video and sharing it. And the buzz started to happen for this show. Everybody was excited. Everybody wanted to get behind it. Everybody wanted to see what this was going to look like in the form of a kickboxing and Muay Thai product. At this time, if you do not live in, the Philippines or China, Australia, if you didn't live in that part of the world, you weren't able to get it on TV. But it didn't matter. The buzz was there. And as I mentioned before, we had Mega Upload, SendSpace. When the show popped up, there was a forum dedicated to popping it up or putting it out there so that people could download and upload it. And the excitement for it had built and built and built. So it became a weekly thing to wait for this, the episodes to come out, watch the episodes, then go to a separate, forum and talk about what you had witnessed. And it was so great. It was one of the cooler things in my whole experience of loving kickboxing and following Muay Thai to see how many people get behind this show. So it all starts off with this trailer that was servicing and going all over the world. The initial athletes were, mixed. Like some people were said to be on the show and it didn't happen. It just kind of got moved around. But in the end, these are the athletes that were chosen for the show. We had Rafik Bakari from France, who was a really tough, very undersized guy for the weight class that they were doing. They called it middleweight, but, I'd say guys were weighing around, below 170, but above 160, so they were kind of in that range. But Rafik was a tough, very I'll talk about it more when I talk about the episodes, but as far as his fight style goes, he's an undersized guy, but he's really tricky, and if you move forward, he could run you into offense. Like, he's really good spinning elbows, up elbows. He fought a lot of really tough guys outside of the show. He'd fought George Petrosian, he'd fought Yotsen Klai. He's a really tough kid. Then we had Norpal Fairtex. Norpal Fairtex was a 141 Lumpini champion, if I remember correctly. Has a really good style about him. He's just, when you see him on form, he represents Muay Thai in its craftiest form. You had Bruce Preacher McPhee, which is one of the more interesting guys because Bruce was a And to this day, if I remember correctly, he has more fights, more Muay Thai fights than anyone in Australia, like way more. So Jaume Parr is probably the most popular guy. But as far as the total number of fights, Bruce McPhee has the most. He's, of course, you know, they call him the preacher. He's known because he'd always dye his hair. He used to be purple. But he's just an interesting guy. We'll get into him later. David Paquette. David Paquette was a guy who, once this show was announced, I'm a film junkie. So even back then, way before I was coaching, you know, now I coach a lot of high-level athletes and fighters. But back then, I didn't know any of these guys. Or, well, I won't say any of these guys, like half these guys. Some of them were really popular, but some of them I had to do my research. David Paquette was one of the guys who I had to do the research on. And then I realized right away, he's got a good kickboxing style. He can find his low kick. He's got decent boxing. And he knows how to score and tie up in the clinch well. So I was like, okay, I'm curious to see how David does. And we had Alan Sylvester. I'd seen Alan fight a few times. I believe he, if I remember correctly, he's in the trailer for the original. Tough kid, moved out to Thailand. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more as far as, you know, the ailments and so on that he dealt with. But I'd seen him fight before the show. Zidoff Akuma Dominic, I'd heard of him, but I hadn't really seen him fight that much at the time. So now, people want to go back and say, hey, I knew about this person the whole time. I did not know Zidoff that well. I only knew him a little bit. Joakim UK Carlson, he was the oldest guy on the show. We'll talk about that a little bit later. He was from Sweden. Zidoff, as I mentioned before, I apologize. Zidoff was from Switzerland, also Croatia. And then Alan Sylvester was from Canada. And David Paquette was from UK. So right now we're talking, we're showing different parts of the world. And as you notice, a lot of these guys have connections to Europe, with the exception of Alan, who's from Canada. Then we have Sean Wright, who was from Scotland. And then that would make up what would become the Wild Boar team, the Wild Boars. I'll get into that later. And then we had the Tiger Kings, which was led by Jaume Parr. And then Jotun Clive Fairtex. So I bring those two names up is because when this show was announced, when the lineup was announced, they were by far the two most popular guys and the ones that people said, that's your final. So before this show even happened, before it even went through any of its episodes, it was pretty clear for people to look at this roster and say, those are the two. Those guys are the ones to look out for. They are extremely, extremely talented. Jaume Parr in his youth, when he threw his hands, Jaume Parr was never known for being particularly crafty. He had some crafty moves, but the thing that made him tough was he had really, really strong for the weight class. He's really, really big for the weight class. And when he threw his boxing and combinations, he would just throw these, you know, video game-esque, you know, 15, 16, 17 shot combos with his hands. And he could check kicks, he could play a kick counter game, he could get into the clinch, but really you just couldn't handle the pressure of Jaume Parr. That's what made him so special. Jotun Clive Fairtex, of course, was famous because he was a WBC champion at the time, and he beat Jaume Parr. They fought for the first WBC championship. Jotun Clive was a Lumpini champion, if I remember correctly, it was Lumpini, at 141. Very, very skilled guy, signed to Fairtex, I think when he was 18 or 19, but very skilled. And then we had Soren Mongkontong, and Soren is, I mean, he is one of my favorite guys to watch because he really understands what they call, you know, playing the game. You know, like Soren really understands the rhythm of playing Muay Thai. So if you watch him, aesthetically, he's one of the more beautiful guys to watch perform because he just does everything in such a appealing way. Like, he's got such an interesting skill about him. So he's a lot of fun to watch. So I thought that he was a pretty cool fighter, and I'll talk more about his fight when we get into it. But Soren, he's from Australia along with Jaume Parr and Bruce McPhee. Other than that, we had Jose Pitu Sanz. Pitu is a guy who I believe is also in the initial trailer. He was a guy who I knew of, but a guy who I just saw, a lot of people just saw as serviceable. Like, he was a nice guy because there were several people on the forums who knew him, but they just didn't like his chances against some of the better guys. There was Jabir Askarov, who was extremely young, so this was a big, you know, step-up opportunity for him. The guy from the United Arab Emirates, so he's Middle East, but he's kind of from South Russia. And James Martinez, who was from the U.S. Now, people weren't as big on James Martinez because they didn't know him that well. If you were going to pick someone from the U.S. As far as world-class, you know, Muay Thai guys to represent the States, James Martinez's name would not have come up. He probably was just over at Thailand at the right time, or just time and place that worked out for him. But and again, this isn't a reflection of, you know, his skill and his ability to win the tournament. It's just his name recognition. At the time, no one knew who he was. So if he's listening to this podcast, I think even he would admit, you know, I was an unknown when that happened very early into my fight career. But it was a huge opportunity, so we had to do it. And then we had Kim Khan, or what we call is Zach Khan. He was the local guy. Had to have a guy from the locals. Didn't have a lot of fights. I'll get into his story a little bit later. And then the last person we had another Canadian in Trevor TNT Smanage. I had known who Trevor was because Trevor fought on a promotion that I don't believe it exists anymore. But they had a promotion in Florida. And they were doing full rules Muay Thai. And they were one of the main ones in the U.S. that was doing pro kickboxing, pro Muay Thai on a regular basis. So he had ended up fighting for them. So that lineup made what became the ultimate, or the Muay Thai's version of the Ultimate Fighter, Muay Thai's version of the Contender. That was the 16 fighters that were going to fight in a tournament for $150,000. And, you know, that was, these are the guys who built the aura and the presence and the excitement that came behind this show years before, you know, or years after, I'd say. People still went back to it, still watched the episodes, and these athletes, they still bring life to what was a really interesting idea that was executed extremely well. So I'll go ahead and jump into it. I am going to go through this full. We're going to go through the episodes. I'm going to tell you what was interesting, some famous quotes. We're really going to have fun with it this episode, and I really want to sell you guys on sitting down and watching that. So this is the 10th anniversary of the April 26th, if I remember correctly, was the airing of the last episode, and that was in 2008. April 23rd. So here we are at the end of April, 10 years later. We're going to revisit this full. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. So if you haven't listened to it, I'll break it down in a way that you have time to listen to some of the episodes, some of the podcasts, go back and watch an episode, or you can watch all the way through and then listen to it. I'm going to go ahead and give you separation. I'm not going to confuse the episodes. I'm going to have it separated. So we get into the show. Of course, we find out that Stephen Fox, who was one of the main contributors to the WMC, like he played a role as far as the sanctioning body, and I actually met him down the road at Champions vs. Champions. He does a show along with Jamie, who is a very attractive woman, who is a personality, if you will, in Australian TV, who a lot of people were on the fight forums were big fans of hers because she's got that accent. She's very, very pretty. But she did a good job of kind of, my favorite thing about Jamie throughout the shows is she gets into the fights and she finds herself, I feel like she roots for whoever's losing. That was my favorite thing about Jamie. Like if someone was losing in a fight, she'd cheer for them to fight back. Someone went down, she'd cheer for them to get up. If someone was losing in any of their contests, any of their challenges, she'd always cheer and root for the losing team to catch up. So Jamie had a really interesting role. I really liked it. But we'll go ahead and get into what I would say is the first episode and kind of how everything kind of gets broken down. So here's my favorite. So let's go ahead and get started. They start announcing who the fighters are going to be. And then after the fighters come in, they announce the captains. The captains are made, Rafik from France is one of the captains, and Jianwei Par is the other captain. Jianwei Par, of course, is probably, like I said, going into it, one of the most popular fighters in the world, not just because of his what he did in fighting, because Jianwei Par has literally fought for every organization that I can think of outside of, you know, Glory Kickboxing. He's fought for them. He has fought for everybody. And, I mean, he fought for Super League back in the day. They were real big. He fought for Super League. K1, of course, fought for K1. Fought in the Evolution shows in Australia. Fought just anybody I can think of that had a major promotion. He had fought for them. But more important than that, Jianwei Par was one of us. Jianwei Par was such a regular in the fight forums. He posted all the time, whether he had a fight or not. And he was just a part of the community. So everyone loved Jianwei Par. So before this even came out, And of course, he didn't give away spoilers. He kind of did his job there, but everybody was all in on John Wayne Parr. He was the guy to be on the show and represent the highest level of kickboxing and Muay Thai for the regular fan, because he was on the fight forums all the time. K1 fans, K1 USA. That's K1 USA somewhat. More K1 fans than Kakutui. Those were the main ones you would see John Wayne Parr. And Rafiq, of course, had now, like, once the show started, he started to develop this attitude for, he didn't care. He kind of, people thought that he was trying to move his team in a way that he can avoid some fighters. He talked trash and got into it a lot. He was an interesting character. But we started to show off and they're made captains. I'm going to enter my favorite moment. This is the moment that I knew the show was going to be good. There's just a little bit of, I don't know if we'll call it bitterness, but a friendly rivalry that kind of has a grudge to it. Bruce McPhee and John Wayne Parr are there, and John Wayne is, they're going down the list of who to pick for the players. They say, all right, you guys can pick your teams. John Wayne gets to go first. He picks Jotun Klai. He says Jotun Klai is the strongest. He'd lost Jotun Klai. He picked Jotun Klai. So then they're going through it. And then I believe John Wayne Parr's second pick is Soren. So if you're going to pick a guy from Australia, the fact that he would pick Soren and not Bruce was, would be a surprise if you were doing that off of, like, if you're doing like a draft, like for, fantasy points, you would definitely have gone Bruce over Soren. But there was a little bit of a rivalry there. But my favorite thing, the thing that let me know this show was going to be legit, the camera pans away and shows the expression on Bruce McPhee's face when John Wayne Parr picks Soren, and it's just gold. It's, this the kind of disgusting look he gives. It's great. So that let me know I was in for a ride. So to pick the teams, and as I mentioned before, teams are the Wild Boars and the Tiger Kings. We get into the first episode, and it starts off with a couple of savage moments where Yod shows off the WBC belt to John Wayne Parr. And then he mentions that John Wayne Parr was crying after the loss. And I was like, all right, this show's, it's already giving me a little bit more. John Wayne Parr, always a good sport about things. He laughed it off and he was like, yeah, he was like, it was a good time, it was a good hard fight. And the two, seemed to be cool afterwards. So it wasn't a heated moment. It was just like a fun moment. So that came up. The guys are kind of joking and laughing. And the personalities are starting to come off. Immediately you see that Zidoff is a joker. And he's really outspoken. And you see how some of the guys are about training. And they're kind of getting used to it. It's just a real good environment. And I think that the show starts off extremely well. So then we get to the first challenge, which is a race, and the race is won by the it's a relay race, and it's ran in pairs, and while it's being run, something that comes up of note happens. They're tied to their bodies and they're running. Now I have to say, this is actually kind of funny when you watch the video. It blows me away how fast they are running tied together with their upper bodies. I'm like, I would be afraid of falling. I'd be afraid that I'd outpace the other person or so on, but they were running full speed, so it was a lot of fun to watch. Anyways, Zach goes down in the race, and again, there's like an apology for it after it happens. I think Soren's like, man, I tripped you up, it's an accident. But that gives the first win to the Wild Boars. The Wild Boars are now able to go out and pick their first fight. They ask who wants to fight first. Norpool says he wants to fight first, and it is agreed that he will fight Trevor Smandich. When this happens, of course, you start to get the first signs of Rafiq being a little bit weird. Like Rafiq wanting maybe someone as strong as Norpool to pick someone not Trevor, because Trevor's definitely newer. But in the end, he's chosen, and Trevor, he had a great story. Trevor had just gotten married right before he flew out to the show. So, and I had heard, like, when I was training in Thailand, I had, run into a couple Canadians, and they knew Trevor, and they talked about how much of a great dude he was and how excited they were that he got the opportunity. So Trevor gets the opportunity. He's fighting first. So he flies. Turns out he's fighting first, and he's going against one of the toughest guys. He's going against Norpool. Trevor was game in the fight, always fighting, always pushing, always doing his best. But in the end, as they say, there are levels to this. And Norpool, not only did he beat him, Norpool, when he's on form, he's one of the most beautiful Muay Thai fighters to watch. Even if you don't want to go through all the back and forth of the show and the challenges, if you're listening to this podcast and you just want to see the entertaining, the entertainment of the how high level these guys were. Go to that fight, watch the very end of it, and just, you know, watch the very end of the episode. Just watch the fight, and you will see how well Norville plays with his low kick motion, how he evades strikes, how he finds his step knees, how he lands his boxing, how he lands his teeps. He's just, there's such a rhythm to it. I remember when I was training in Thailand, and Teddy is the main guy who manages those guys down in Thailand and at Fairtex. I'm talking to Teddy, and he talked about Yosin Klai. He says, man, Yosin Klai is so good, he's so strong, but he could be boring to me sometimes because he's just so much more powerful than guys. As far as seeing how beautiful Muay Thai is, Norpol is the guy. And he goes, he's not as expensive as Yosin Klai, but I want more people to use Norpol. And Norpol really is. When you watch him, he is on form. So Trevor, man, Trevor Spandage came in, great story. And he didn't go down. He kept getting up. He never, like, took a 8 count. He took some bad shots. At one period of time, the quote of the episode for me was in the corner when they said, don't use elbows, feel sorry for him. That's what the Thai coach said to Norpol. And it just lets you know how dominant things were. But Norpol continued to play the game, use his slickness, land really creative offense. And Trevor Spanish kept trying to, you know, early try to get his combo to low kick game going. And then in the end, he just tried to throw more volume. But when you're going against a guy at that high level, you realize these dudes are not normal. They really, really are special. Trevor gave his best. Didn't go his way. He loses. He's the first one to leave the show. And then, of course, they take you through the drama of him kind of talking, grateful that he had the opportunity, upset that he had to go home early, glad that he went the distance with someone that good. And then it shows him exit the loft. We go to episode number 2. So if you're watching it, this is your break. If you want to watch one, you can watch one, then come back. We're in episode number 2. We go to the episode, and it starts off where we get a kind of a cool moment, if you will, from James Martinez. James Martinez writes, Trevor the Tiger Heart was here. They really gave him his due because he really did fight back as hard as he could against a, you know, overmatch. We fought against a really, really good guy. And so it starts off there. And then we start to see a lot more of the Rafiq signs, like where he's talking about how he doesn't care who anyone is, talks about how he hates the Thais, commenting on, you know, he said, like, he doesn't care who is or who anyone is, who they train. He'll fight anyone. And it just, the way he did it kind of came off in a disrespectful manner. So, again, you're starting to see he's the one kind of selling himself as a heel on the show. Like, he's the one you watch and you're like, all right, this guy is irritating and so on. So then that leads into him saying this really off comment where he says, Yosin Klai said he wanted to fight Sean. Yosin Klai does not say he wants to fight Sean, but he just threw that out there. Now, I don't know if he was trying to mess with Sean mentally, and Sean Wright was like, where'd that come from? He was trying to figure it out, but it was an extremely strange moment. So they go to the challenge. The challenge is the boat race. In the boat race, they've got two drummers. David is the drummer for one team. James is the drummer for the other team. I just had a laugh that both the black guys were chosen as the drummer. I'm sorry, that's funny to me. Anyways, so they had drummers, and the Tiger Kings, who had James as the drummer, they started off pretty fast, and they were in the lead, and then all of a sudden, you know, just the rhythm or whatever it was, the Wild Boars were able to catch up to the rhythm that they were getting from David, and they started to catch up, and then right at the end, they were able to get the lead and win. So then they've got two wins, and they get to pick the fight. The winner of the challenge gets to pick the fight. After that, it is decided that Sean is going to fight James. He decided to fight James because where they were level-wise was about the same. He had more fights. He'd been fighting in Thailand. He's relatively young at the time. And Martinez was similar size, similar. He probably had a little bit more experience than Martinez, but matchup-wise, he liked that. So that was the fight that they wanted to do. There was a couple of episode moments before the fight that went off that I thought were funny. Norpol said that Trevor was an easy fight. The great moment where they're like laughing and joking and the Wild Boars are making fun of the Tiger Kings, and Yosin Klai sees Rafiq and he says, you have a big mouth and a small heart, which is funny because he says it in English, and everybody laughs because, you know, he's not really an English speaker. Which, by the way, if you go to Thailand now and you talk to Yosin Klai, his English is, you know, it had gotten extremely better. So that was definitely good. There was a joke about after Sean and James got going, there's a joke that Sean should ransom James' kid, you know, say something about ransoming James' kids back to him, because James said he was here to fight for his children, and they have this emotional moment where they put him on camera and he's talking and he's like, man, you know, I'm here for my daughter. I missed her birthday because I was training here, and I missed another birthday because I was training here. So I really want to do well in this tournament for her. And then Sean has this moment where he's like, man, I should like write something where, because he said he envisions that the person he's fighting, like, kidnapped his daughter, I should send a ransom note. And then he decided later that probably wasn't the best idea, but it was pretty savage that he said it, so I decided to add to the podcast. So we get to the fight, and immediately you see that James is trying to get his offense going, but Sean has a better rhythm of how to score consistently. One thing that you hear me say on this podcast show all the time is one of the most important things about being a fighter is fighter identity. If you know what you want to do out there and you know how to have success, that's who you are. So the way I explain it is this. If you won 100 rounds, what would it look like? Yotsen Clyde wins 100 rounds. There's going to be a lot of left body kicks and a lot of right hand, you know, hook counters. That's his identity. He knows he can win 100 rounds like that. In that way, I thought Sean Wright had a good rhythm about how to score combos to low kick offense and how to not take big damage with kicks. Martinez seemed like he was trying to find his flow, and he would throw teeps, and like he was looked like he was like trying stuff out. Whereas Wright knew exactly what he wanted to do. Sean got into it. Martinez held his block early. Sean saw it and adjusted his feet and kicked the inside of the rear leg. That's a shot you can't take a lot of kicks to. You see Rico Verhoeven's probably the best heavyweight in the world right now. He is really good at that shot where he'll throw a combo, and even if you don't get your check leg up, he will attack the inside leg of your rear leg. And because Martinez had the check leg up, Wright was able to go underneath and attack that leg. So first he scores it a couple times early. There's a 8 count. And then he gets up again, and then after a combo flow, this time I can't even remember if the leg got that high, but he went again at the rear leg to the inside, scores big, down goes Martinez, and Martinez does not return. First round stoppage for Sean Wright. Sean Wright then, kind of excited that he got the fight. He had a really great one, my favorite quotes of the whole tournament. He says, we're both going to fight, but in the end, it's all just soft tissue damage. Love it. Sean Wright was great. So it was a great episode. Really showed Sean Wright well. Talked about how he got into the sport. He'd been in it for 12 years. I think he was 22 or 21 when the show was being aired. Sacrificed a lot for it. He was all in on it when he fell in love with it. And he really did a good job of selling himself. He gets the big victory here. James Martinez eliminated. He was the only American guy on the show. When it happened, the forums weren't that kind to Martinez because they doubted whether or not he should have been in there at all. But at the end of the day, if I was offered that opportunity with James Martinez's experience, I would have said yes, and so would have anybody else in the U.S. You're not going to turn that opportunity down. Martinez has that on his resume for life, no matter what he does with the rest of his career. And I've seen him fight. I saw him fight in it's Showtime, and I've seen him fight in other organizations after this was over with. To me, he's still James Martinez, the U.S. guy who was on the Contender Asia. And he's got that forever. So shout out to James. Wish him all the best. I hope he listens to this podcast and reflects upon his time there heavily. Sean Wright moves on. We then move to episode number 3. And we get to the famous Jabir Askarov and Rafiq fight. Here's my favorite thing about it. The thing that threw me off about it the most is it's probably my favorite filming of a fight that I've ever seen that was kind of like not an actual fight. And the reason why I say it is the footage seemed like, okay, they're going to calm down and the fight's not going to actually happen. So after they get into each other's face, Askarov's upset. He doesn't like Rafiq's mouth. They get into each other's face, and Rafiq, it's under the cover of being pushed away. So it's like when they were squared up with each other, Rafiq didn't do anything. It was only when Stefan Fox gets between them, or I can't remember who it was, I think it was Stefan, gets between them, and he starts to physically move Rafiq away. So now there's someone in the way. So he uses that time and he throws a head kick. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like, it came up and it got Jabba in the shoulder. And I mean, it could have been way worse. Like, because Jabba was still there, just kind of standing there, you know, jawing at each other. So then Jabba Askarov is like fighting. And he's like throwing some punches to try to get to him. And then, he scores a couple, but in the end, you know, the head kick, that was like the most dangerous looking thing. And it kind of caught him on the shoulder and it could have been way worse. So there seems to be a calm in the action. And then when there's a calm in the action, Rafiki uses that opportunity to try to sneak up and then throw another sucker punch at Jabba Askarov. Like, he waits till things calms down and he waits till someone's in front of him again. And he throws a sucker punch. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the term sucker punch, it's when someone throws a punch in a not fair situation, when the other person isn't looking. Like, for a while, there used to be a popular time where people would just, those knockout videos where someone would just run up and punch someone and knock them out. That's a sucker punch. There's nothing brave or honorable or cool about that. You're just a horrible human being if you're not squaring up with someone, if you're not announcing intentions for violence, especially in a period of time like that where you started the talk and people are calming it down and you're looking as the calm period to throw your attack. It's like the worst of the worst. So he throws that punch, and then they get into a situation where Jabba ends up getting him down, and he's like almost in full mount throwing punches down on him, and they get separation. So that period of time, it's just, you know, not good at all. Like, it's just, it's horrible. So everybody's really, really upset with that. So we move on to the challenge, and in the challenge, it is another kind of, like, challenge course, and there's several parts to it. So everybody has to go through this whole thing where there's like push-ups involved, there's like this weight thing involved, there's like a sprint part of it, and then you jump in the water, you've got to carry this weight above your head. So they are sick. At this time, the Tiger Kings are sick of Rafiki, and they want to get Rafiki out of there. So everybody's all in on whatever it takes to get him off the show. So we got to win the contest so we can be in the fight to get rid of him. Askarov wants to fight Rafiki. John Wayne wants to fight. Everybody wants to do it. So what happens in this fight is, or what happens in this contest is, it's close, and then the Wild Boars are in the lead a little bit. And then all of a sudden, John Wayne Parr and the crew, they start to catch up. And then it's John Wayne Parr's turn. And here's my favorite part. John Wayne Parr is clearly cheating in the lunges area. So they're supposed to do lunges, sit-ups, push-ups. There's a jump rope, and then they carry a weight in the swimming pool. When they're doing the lunges, John Wayne, at one period of time, I remember because I hear her, and it's probably a voiceover, but I hear Jamie say, John Wayne's catching up. Because as I mentioned before, she always cheers for the team that's losing. And to catch up, pretty much he skips his like last seven lunges. It just kind of runs towards Rafiki, and no one says anything. And then the rest of it's even. And then they get into the pool and they're carrying the weight above their head, and Rafiki drops the weight. And when he drops the weight, they know there's going to be a fight. And then they get a cheer that, in the cheer, it says, go home, Rafiki. So they decide that they're going to have their kind of, you know, I guess they're meeting, they're trying to decide who fights. And then the discussion is, who's going to fight? Is it going to be Askarov or is it going to be John Wayne? They sit down, they talk it out. And in the end, John Wayne is the person that fights Rafiki. The fight was super ugly. It was not a clean fight because John Wayne was not himself. He always throws in punches, but he was rushing in with his feet way too much, way more than he normally does. And he didn't get to any kind of kick offense, considering that he was so much bigger than Rafiki. Rafiki is a crafty dude. And if there's one thing that needs to be credited for, and I'm going to mention it again when I get to the finale, Rafiki is a good fighter, and he's a tough fighter. He doesn't have the skills necessarily to win all the rounds, and he wasn't big and physical, so he wasn't strong enough to beat all the guys. But as far as finding offense, he was really good at it. So Rafiki had run the guys. He kept running John Wayne Parr into elbows. Like, he could do a spinning elbow, or he could do an up elbow, because John Wayne was so frustrated, he was trying to get to him, so he just kept running into offense. In the end, John Wayne was able to win the fight because he was able to put together some punch flurries together, a head kick. He had been gone down from a sweep earlier in the fight and gone down from a takedown earlier in the fight. But John Wayne got way more because he's so much stronger than Rafiki. And Rafiki's body language also hurts him a lot, because sometimes when he's lost, he just does something spinning, or he falls into the ropes, and he just doesn't look like he's on par being a high-level athlete. He looks a little awkward. So Rafiq ended up putting out a performance that wasn't, you know, a winning performance, but it was a performance that people say, hey, this guy's better than I thought. That was really, really good stuff. So Rafiq loses. He goes home and he says, hey, he's going to remember when the little French Moroccan guy cut him right here. And then Jean-Wayne Parr talked about how he was almost up to 200 stitches. So he was more worried about, did I go over 200, which he later did in his career. At that time, I think he got to 193. So Jean-Wayne Parr wins, and we move from episode 3 to episode number 4. In episode number 4, everybody is pumped because they're glad that Rafiq's gone. They once again, even in the ring after the match, they did the chant, go home Rafiq, which is hardcore heel stuff if you want to get a guy out of there. Anyways, they talked afterwards that they respected the work for, and I appreciate this too, but they really, really respected what was done for, you know, or the efforts put in by Rafiq. They said, man, he's got a big mouth, but if he just, you know, they respect his fight. Even the guy he got in a fight with, Askarov, said it. Respect the fight, I just don't respect the mouth. So he really wanted that to happen, or that they really wanted it to be different, but he was gone now, so they're going to move forward. Then the next challenge comes into play, and they're supposed to do a puzzle. And they break this ice, and after they break the ice, they put the puzzle pieces together. While they're doing the challenge, on an accident, one of the puzzle pieces gets lost under ice, and even though the Tiger Kings win it, there was a really good chance that the Wild Boars would have won first, but they couldn't find that piece. So they thought that they were done. They were like, the piece isn't here. Then they found the piece later. So they ended up losing. So then the question comes, who do they want to fight next? And it was a really important question for them because several guys wanted to fight, but one of the guys was sick. And a lot of people in the house had fallen sick. So the question was, if Biquette and Zidoff and Norpol had already fought, but Jakim, if they were all sick, and Alan Sylvester is always a little bit sick, if they were sick, who would want to fight? Like, who would want to fight them? And Soren then goes ahead and delivers this gem on the show. He says, if I'm going to fight someone and they are sick, I'm going to fight them. It's not my problem, and we are in a competition. Soren was definitely down to fight someone sick. He could care less. It's $150,000 on the line. I can't blame him for thinking that. If they were sick and their number gets called, that's just how the fates go. There's someone who's fighting right now, sick, not to the best of their ability. They don't get a do-over. They don't get to switch the dates. Contract was signed, and they go out there and do it. So I understand Soren saying, hey, I'm not going to just look for someone healthy just because. But at the same time, it was pretty savage. So we move on, and then Jotunklei does one of the coolest things on the show. Jotunklei was confident that Bruce McPhee would want to fight Zach. Maybe Bruce had said it earlier, and then the camera pans away to Bruce, and Bruce says, if they're smart, they'll have Zach fight right now while he can. He said, Zach's an easy mark. He says, I know if I fight Zach, I'm guaranteed into the second round. Zach was very, he had one of the fewest amount of fights for the guys there. He had about 16 fights, and he was a local guy. So people thought that he's put on the show just because he was from Singapore, I think specifically. That's why they thought he was on the show. So Yod had heard this, and Yod says, I want to fight Bruce McPhee because he's the strongest person on their team as a fighter. He's the strongest person on the team in the contest, and I'll beat him for sure. He says, plus, he wants to fight Zach, so I will fight him instead of. And once you hear that, like, I remember the fight forums, everybody's like, man, Yod's the man. You know what I'm saying? He probably shouldn't be doing it because people weren't that high on Zach in the beginning, but Yod is the man. So that was decided. And I remember Bruce McPhee, he was, you know, psyching himself up. He says, hey, I'll go out there, I'm going to give my best. I'm not afraid of anything. So Jotunklei is a strong fighter, but he's a lazy fighter. Something of which he has a reputation throughout his whole career. When I was in Thailand, it was definitely spoken of how he would train sometimes and not train other times. And he really lived off his skill more than his work ethic. A lot of people felt that way. And I think that there is some truth to that. But unfortunately, he's still way better than Bruce. Bruce Strong came out looking to get into his offense. Jotunklei is too tough. The thing that everyone needs to know about Jotunklei Fairtex, if you've never seen him fight before, is the left leg. It is like nothing you've ever seen before. When he starts cracking that left body kick, It is the tie pad that you see. When you see people hit the tie pad in perfect form, when they fight, they actually don't land it that way. They land it good, but they don't land it to the way that they land on the tie pads. Jochenklatt will kill his left leg on a tie pad and then go out there and kill a human even worse than when he kicks a tie pad. There is a video where Jochenklatt beats a guy who weighs 220 pounds, and he just beats him with body kicks. And because the guy can't stop the body kick, in Thailand, if you can't stop a technique, if it keeps owning you over and over and over, they'll stop the fight and say that you're not of the level. And in this fight against this heavyweight, Jochenklatt, in like a minute and a half, just goes out there and just starts firing left body kicks until they stop it. In this fight, not only does he have that really, Jochenklatt also has a really super crafty right hand. Like, he can find his step back hook, and he can counter in between. He's got really good vision for you know, when punches land. But really, he just starts smashing the left leg away. And Bruce says it in the corner. He goes, "He's smashing my arm to death." And they're like trying to yell at him and give him advice and tell him what to do, be first and so on. Doesn't matter. He's going against Jochenklatt. And I think Bruce, to his credit, at no time did I ever think Bruce was going to go down and take a knee. At no time did I ever think that Bruce McPhee is, though he's not, you know, as strong or as talented as Jochenklatt just blew him out of the water. His skill blew him out of the water. But Bruce was physically strong enough to take what was coming his way from Jochenklatt. And he stayed up and he battled and he battled. In the end, Jochenklatt was the victor. Bruce, as he left, he did this really cool thing because he's the only guy to do it. He called up to his team because they're like, you know, he could see there's the ring, and he can see in the background the loft, which is above the ring. And they all open the doors and they say goodbye to him. And it's a really cool moment because he's the only guy to do it. Everybody else just leaves and they don't regard the people who are in the room. So really, really good stuff in defeat by Bruce McPhee. As far as Jochenklatt goes, he moves on. Just a really, really strong fighter and fun to watch. So going to episode 5, and the confidence is switched. The Tiger Kings went from, you know, faces being down and losing to now they're on winning streak and things are 2-2. And then they go into another season, and afterwards they keep noting that they're beating the captains, because Rafiq was the captain and he lost, and then Bruce was the captain and he lost. So then they... Zach came up with the term the captain killers, and they felt like whoever's going to be captain next, that person had something to look out for. In the end, they carried that confidence into the tug of war, and the Tiger Kings win the tug of war, so they once again get to pick the fight. So Soren chooses to fight Alan, and the reason why Soren chooses Alan is because he fought him a month before they started filming the show, and he stopped him in the first round. So with that confidence, he had already marked him as a guy he wanted to fight. Alan said that he took the fight on very short notice, like one day's notice, and he had to drop like 7 kilos or something like that. And after dropping the kgs, he said, "I want to do this fight again, but I want to do it with a camp. I want to do it healthy. I want to do it down the road." So he said Soren's just paying his promise back. Soren talked about you know, his relationship with his mother. That's one of the things that they focused on. He said that Muay Thai, one of my favorite quotes he said in it, he said, "It was my man's world," because he had a sister and he had a mom, and that's who he was around the whole time. So when he fell in love with Muay Thai, that was kind of his way to kind of be around a male community and have success, because Soren can fight. So Alan, he talked about his Crohn's disease and how he's always going to be like a little bit sick, and how he had to have medicine on him at all times, but he's a tough guy. And so they go out and they're going to be the fight for that day. But there's one more. I forgot my favorite, one of my favorite moments that I forgot from the contest was the most savage moment in the episode, I would say, would be when Jochenklatt started talking about how he was getting dizzy chasing Bruce McPhee around and circles. And I was like, all right, cool. That's a little bit on the bogus side. But, you know, it's a fight and you're really strong and you got to imagine it's tough going against you. But their reward for winning the truck pull is they all won this $500 like eBay spree. And Askarov was about to buy a phone. And he says, "Hey, I'm going to buy the phone right here." And luckily for him, Zach was paying attention. And Zach was like, "Jabba," he's like, "that's a phone case. You're about to spend $500 on a silicone phone case." And it was just so great. Just funny to see them kind of laugh and joke. Joking done, though, when we get into the fights, And as I mentioned before, Soren had seen him fight before. They had fought before, and Soren had success. For me, and this is really, really important for those of you who are listening to this podcast and you just want to watch the fights, episode 5, just go watch this fight. Soren, Mong Kun Tong, puts on one of the best Muay Thai before. He lands everything. He wins the boxing. He wins the elbows. He wins the knees. He wins the kicks. It is a complete performance. Allen was game. Like you can see that he's fighting sick, and you can see he's fighting his body to perform to the best of his ability. And he's able to find single strikes in moments. But he wasn't able to get into the flow. He wasn't able to get into the game, as they call it. Because Soren, the number one thing that you have to say about Soren when you watch him fight is Soren gets the game. Like, he gets the game of how to play Muay Thai, how to find your offense, how to be slick, how to get out of the way. I hear a lot of the English fighters talk about it. Like, in today's game, they go, man, they like glory rules, like K1 rules. They like it. It's cool. But they prefer the game of Muay Thai. They understand it. They understand the rhythm. And Soren, who doesn't like to fight fast, he prefers to just figure people out and pick them apart. And he does such a great job of it. Just, there's really, I mean, now again, the video is, it's spliced up and it focuses mostly on the action. It doesn't really show the rounds smooth throughout. But you get to see them, and there's like a track for when the offense lands. But really, if you want to see beautiful Muay Thai, Soren puts on a excellent display in episode 5. Probably one of my favorite two. Him and Norpo round 1 of the first round fights, they put on the most beautifully aesthetic Muay Thai performances. As for Allen, again, when you're fighting your body and you're trying to use your skill, it's really, really tough to do. So I thought that he did his best, made a good account for himself, and he battled. He just, they stopped him on the stool because, and again, great cornering. I think it was David Piquet who said, hey, you're not working, save it for another day. And that's what you got to do. Say to someone like, yo, you can bounce back. You can have another opportunity in this one. But today's not your day. You're just losing. And you're just taking damage. And I like that. And David said it before the round. After the second round, he says, hey, if you don't work, I'm going to have to stop this. That's taking care of your athlete. And this show showed a little bit of the greatness throughout the whole, all of the sport. And in this case, you get an example of what a great corner is supposed to do and what a great performance is. So I thought they did a good job of taking care of Allen. And afterwards, he talked and he was like, man, I wish I would have been able to compete to the best of my ability, but grateful that he gave me this rematch. And Allen moves on. And if you're listening to this podcast, man, I thought you fought to your best of your ability. You fought your body and you still put your hands out there and you still did great. But Soren was on fire that night, and that's this game. Sometimes people are on fire. We move on to episode number six. And again, as this is going on, the fight forms are loving it. They're talking about, and the way that I'm describing these fights to you and the way that I'm describing these episodes to you, they were engaged in it all. And we're just going the back and forth. We're talking about the athletes. And Soren, he was another guy who, because we had so many Australians on the K1 Fans Forum, he's another guy whose name popped up a lot. So good stuff by Soren. We move on to episode number 6. Episode number 6, Yod mentions that as Allen's having the struggle, Yod had a bunch of like savage moments, but he says that no punch, no kick, no knee. He was like just out there. That's what he was saying as far as his performance goes. He didn't give him as much love as I gave him. But the challenge was unloading a truck. And it was a very, very close challenge, but once again, the Tiger Kings win it. After the Tiger Kings win it, it is agreed that Jabba Askarov will fight Dave Piquet. Jabba Askarov is the youngest fighter in the house at this time. He is 21 years old, and at this time, if I remember correctly, I think he had already fought Bukau, because he fought Bukau a couple times. And I remember someone saying, wait, you fought Bukau? Because he had started joining the forums. So Askarov started joining the forums really early. So in K1 fans, he was on the fight forums. And I remember someone saying it, and then he posted the YouTube video of when he fought Bukau, and I was like, okay, I like this cat. And Askarov is, if you've ever seen him fight before, he's very strong despite his physical size. Like, he's not a big guy, but he knows his fighter identity. His fighter identity is he's got a really good low kick. He is really strong in clinch dump moments, so he may not be able to fight, pummel, beat the arms, and win in a knee battle, but if you get your body too close to his, he'll go body lock, And he'll dump you or he'll catch your kicks and he'll dump you. So he knows his identity. He ends up choosing David Bakay, who is the leader of the, or the captain of the Wild Boars at the time. David Bakay, as I mentioned before, he's got a good Muay Thai style. Scores well, good with the kicks. Really, really interesting guy. Like, I really watch him. So we get into this episode. It's got some okay back and forth, but for me, the episode, this episode was made by the fight, and that's one of the most important things about it, because after the episode was done, almost no one talked about what happened between the contest and so on. Everyone talked about the fight, and that's what you want to happen. In this way, or in this fight, Jabba Askarov goes out there, and he wins a close decision over David Bakay. Let me be the first one to say it. Based off of what I witnessed in the video, I thought David Bakay won the fight. And I thought that he landed. He was really consistent with the low kicks. And I think that he was better at scoring clean offense throughout. Askarov was able to throw, get a lot of throws and a lot of dumps. But he also got 2 points taken away. One for a clear, PK is already on the ground and he kicked him again in the, like towards his head. They took a point. And then there was a low blow after several. They finally called Askarov for one. And at this point, when I'm watching it, I'm thinking David Bakay moves on. I was certain that he moved on because I thought that he was so clearly and cleanly winning the kickboxing portion of it. He was able to score clean Muay Thai offense. David put on a great display. But Jabba Askarov, he just knows his identity, and he knew he was able to score big with the dumps, and the dumps do score big, in particular in Thailand. Getting thrown on the ground goes a long way for losing a fight. So you never want to be a person who is dictated to. You got to stay strong and stay on your feet. Fortunately, they go to the scorecards and they announce a 96-95. I'm not sure how that scorecard is working, but I mean, that's just kind of the system that they went with. They didn't do a 10-point must, so they had a 96-95 win, even despite the 2 points deducted for Jabba Askarov. Definitely a surprise. A lot of people were really upset by that. Askarov got out of, you're a dirty fighter, you shouldn't have won, PK should have moved forward. If you go watch these, all these fights are on YouTube. Everything I'm telling you right now is on YouTube. If you go watch these, you'll go down the comment section. You'll see a lot of people upset that Askarov was won and moved forward. But in the end, he fought to the best of his ability. He mentioned his faith and he mentioned his relationship with his father. So he was really proud and he was excited that he was moving on. David Bakay had a really emotional moment where he talked about his mom and how he ended up competing in fighting for him, and what she did in his family. Had a real emotional moment where, like, he kind of came to tears on camera. But, you know, he moved on. Afterwards, I saw that he, you know, I think he got married to his girlfriend. I remember him posting the pictures that he got engaged on Facebook. But he went off to do his thing. Good luck to David. If you're listening to this podcast, you fought great, and I really did think that you won the first one. Jabba Askarov, if you're listening to this podcast, you too fought strong. You knew your identity. The scorecards went your way, and you moved on. We moved to episode number 7, and this one is interesting for me because I did my homework. This is what I mean. So after the fight, Askarov said he thought he lost, and he said he was upset with himself because he really did think that he wasn't getting his nod. And they put the camera on Soren, and Soren said that he too thought PK won. Zidoff was, you know, he's all jokes and so on, but like he, you know, talked about how he's a fan of the guys and, you know, John Wayne Parr and some of the other guys in the house, and he kind of lightened the mood after that was done and they were able to move forward, and it was pretty cool. They move on to a challenge. The challenge is they've, you know, they've got these, they swim out to this, you know, thing in the middle of the water, and they touch it and they come back and then they break this watermelon, and then they do it until, what was it? I jumped ahead. For this one, they swim to a plaque and they come back and they destroy a watermelon. Yeah, I remember correctly. So they destroy this watermelon, and at the very end, turns out that Zidoff is a damn Olympic swimmer as he runs down John Wayne Parr. He's able to catch him in the water, and then he's able to finish fast. So they end up winning that contest. It's actually pretty funny because, man, he was freaking swimming. So they win. Wild Boars get the win, and then the fight is made for Zidoff to go against Zach. The fight had a couple of moments in it. I thought it was crazy when they were supposed to break the watermelon, how everybody used really pretty good form to kick through the the watermelon. Some people punch, but if you threw a kick, it looked pretty crazy. They went out and got some suits, and I thought people had some pretty cool suit games. Norpol, his suit game was on point, man. He was looking good. Those guys were, you know, all model ready, and I thought that it was a fun episode to see them all kind of join and do that part of their lives. And then it talked about PETA and P2 and Zidov's friendship and how they didn't want to ever want to fight each other because they knew each other from, you know, before the show. So that was pretty cool. It happened. Friends ended up fighting on this show, and I'll talk about it later. But I thought that that was a pretty cool, pretty cool episode to show that part of it. But in the end, we get Zach versus Zidov. And one thing they talk about with Zidov is he's got a history where he'd gone to jail several times, and Muay Thai was a way that he was able to turn his life around. And for Zach Khan, we're talking about a local kid who didn't have a lot of fights, but he was looking to make good on the opportunity. Here's what I wanted to tell you guys about Zach. When Zach was announced for this show, it was a consensus on all of the fight forums that he shouldn't have been there. The reason why this happened for Zach, and it's not Zach's fault, but K1 had a history of always having the person who wins the K1 Japan Grand Prix gets an automatic spot in the 8. They always get them in the World Grand Prix, they get a spot. So while everybody else has got to go through the elimination, the K1 Japan winner automatically gets a spot in the K1 World Grand Prix. And a lot of people felt like that wasn't fair. They wanted the K1 Max and the K1 heavyweights to reflect the best talent in the world. And if a Japanese fighter didn't make it, a Japanese fighter shouldn't be in it. What they didn't realize was it was a Japanese TV show. So it's always going to help to have a local athlete on the TV for those fight cards. Like that's important. So when that came up, when that opportunity came up, it was, I don't know how to say it, but it's something that people were against. They just didn't like that K1 did it. So when this card was announced for the people who were going to be in the show and they saw Zach's name and they're thinking about their favorite fighters who didn't make the list, immediately people were against Zach. They didn't like him being on the show. So what I decided to do was I was going to find Zach's fight. I was going to find him fight and see for myself the skill that he had. And the first thing I realized is Zach Khan can play the Muay Thai game. He is extremely crafty. He's got a really, really sneaky low kick. He's got a good combo flow. And then all of a sudden, he can just explode off tempo and have a like 3-shot combo where you don't get a read on any of the shots and you just absorb everything. He is very, very sneaky. And so I went to the forums and I started making an argument for Zach Khan. I'm arguing for him in Kakatugi. I'm arguing for him in K1 fans. And then in a really cool moment, Zach Khan, for whatever reason, he sees me making an argument for him. And then I go to Kakatugi and I see I've got like a private message and it's a message from him. And he says, man, I appreciate you're one of the only people out here on the forums that's defending me and, making an argument for me. And he goes, here goes a link to my blog. And because he had a blog kind of show what his, you know, his life was. He ended up being a DJ later in life. And he goes out there in this fight and in round one and he displays exactly what I was talking about. This dude has a good, savvy Muay Thai game. Like, just able to find offense. His step knee can run people in the step knees. His low kick game, his movement, and just he just understands it. So if you're going to try to play single kicks with him, he'll make you look like a fool. You better get into some kickboxing, and you got to use some athleticism. In the end, round two starts, and he injures himself. He injures himself, shoulder, you could see it happen. And then right away, Zidov, who was already an offensively aggressive guy anyways, Zidov brings it. He goes after him right away. He's throwing a lot of offense, and he's able to get a couple more downs, one that he scored, and then I think the other one was Zach just going down on his own off the injury. So Zidov moves on, which is for the TV show. That was a big deal because Zidov was well-liked on TV. Like, he was a funny guy, and he's a character, and people got behind him, so he moves on. Zach Khan loses, but afterwards, after he fought, everybody thought differently of Zach Khan. If you look at the forums, they were like, hey, no one admitted that they didn't want him on the show. They only admitted that he fought well, and he showed a lot of craftiness. So shout out to Zach, proving the doubters wrong, and just letting them see what you can do. And shout out to Akuma, who, Dominic really brought the fight. Zidoff really brought the fight when he saw that his man was injured, and that's how this game works. This ain't tag, you know. This is the combat sports, and he turned it up when he had to. Zidoff moves on. We then moved to the last fight, and this one right here was my favorite one to look at the fight forms about. So the last fight of the first round, episode 8, we are, the challenge is, it is, let me see, you complete a like this high ropes course, and like they're there are four sections, and you're on these ropes, and you're kind of running tree to tree, and the course kind of takes you through it, and you're doing it as a contest, and the Tiger Kings win it. So you're like strapped to this thing, and you're running tree to tree and these cords. So the Tiger Kings win this contest, and we already know what the last fight's going to be. And the reward they get is they get to go to a club. And after they go, after they announce it, Jian Wei Par asks it off, because he's Jian Wei Par, and we all love Jian Wei Par. He asked it off if he could talk to him for a second, and then he asked the people who ran the show, is it okay if we invite the Wild Boars with us? It's the last challenge. Is there any way we can invite them? So, of course, being good TV, they allow it. So everybody goes off, and they end up going to this club. And that is when they get to the club, Askarov hits us with this great one. Jabba has the quote, "When I came to the door, you know what I see? I see girls. I stay here with 10 ugly boys, you know. I don't want to see them. First thing I want to see is girls." So it's hilarious that people don't understand how long they were in this house. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But they're in the house for much longer than what the Ultimate Fighter does. The Ultimate Fighter does like 6 weeks. And I think this past season, I think they did it all in like 4 weeks or 4.5 weeks. But these guys were there for like more than 2 months. They were there for a long time. So they go perform to the best of their ability, living in this house, or training in this house, and they get this reward at the end of it all where they all get to go out. My favorite thing about it is everybody seemed like they were having a good time. Like, they're all laughing and joking, and, you know, Yost and Clyde, everybody's all dressed up, and they seem to really be enjoying each other's company. And that's huge if you're going to be stuck in the house with the same people, to have those moments. So we go from there, and we go to the fight. Now, the thing about the fight was two things that happened. Jian Wei Par got the chicken pox for the second time in his life. So at 31 years old, he gets the chicken pox, and they quarantine him and they remove him. The other thing that they talked about in it was UK, or Joachim Carlson, the oldest guy in the house, he had gone out drinking a little bit too much the night before. So the next day after the party, he was, you know, along with some other people, really dealing with a bit of a hangover. P2 did not drink. He, P2 Sands was focused. He needed to make weight. He had his suit on. He was like, "Man, I see this guy partying. I see this guy not taking it serious." And Carlson was already really quiet on the show. The camera goes to him the least. Out of 8 episodes, they focus on him the least amount because he said that few words. He then goes, you know, gets drunk and so on. And Sands is like, "You know what? I'm going to make him pay for that. I'm going to come out. I'm going to be on fire." We get to the fight. When we get to the fight, they talk about how UK said, "Man, I had a bad history. I was doing crime. I'd gone to jail several times. And then I had my son. And that meant I turned my whole life around, fell in love with Muay Thai, and I want to be someone that my son's proud of." Really cool moment. P2 Sands, same thing. He has family. Didn't have the criminal background. He just talked about how he was doing this for his family, and he wanted to be someone that his son loved and looked up to. So they go to the fight. And in the fight, it's actually pretty good back and forth by both guys, but UK got his low kick game going pretty quickly. Like, so I could see that P2 Sands was hurt by the low kick, and then all of a sudden he started to build the offense with the hands, scores a big knockdown, and then he cleans it up with a KO later in the fight. UK wins it. Here's why this was really, really fun. The reason why this was fun to listen to in the fight forums is because everybody was making an argument for drinking. They're like, "See, people were counting us drinkers out, and us drinkers could really fight. And I've never drank before, but it's really, really entertaining to laugh and look at these guys as they are saying UK is their hero because he drinks. He had a hangover, and he went out there, and he won by KO." So it was hilarious. So we get through that first round, and we move to the quarterfinals. Quarterfinals brings us a lot of good fights, and what we're going to go into is there's going to be 4 straight stoppages. And if you're doing a TV show, that's great for TV. So let's go ahead and go down them. They started calling UK a sleeping bear because of how quiet he was and how, but he had some skills. And they were like, hey, before the KO, you had, you know, really had some success with the hands. So UK gets a victory. The contender gives them all bracelets. And then they said they're going to have a dinner, and they have this really cool thing where they invite their families. And you can see the relationships that they've been talking about in the first 8 episodes. So it was really cool. So my favorite, of course, of them all was Jotun Clyde, because him and his mom, she just talks about how whenever he fights, he doesn't spend any of it. He just gives it to his mom because he knows his mom is poor. And you just fall in love with Jotun Clyde's story. Like, before he wins this thing, you fall in love with his story when you see that. You see Soren and his mom, because you'd heard about that relationship. So it's really cool to see their back and forth, and that's really, really fun. Like, that's really cool to see. You see UK and his son, and then you see Ole Larsen, who was supposed to be on the show, and I think an injury separated him. So then Zidoff got in the show because of it. So when he introduced Ole Larsen, he says, this here is my boss. He's my everything. It's kind of funny. So, but yeah, they introduced family, and it was a really good change of pace for the episodes. We then go into this new way of picking the fights. And the new way of picking the fight is they've got this like Chinese chest, and you open the drawers, and if there's like a chest that's got a little blue dude in it, you're in the blue corner, and if it's a red dude, you're in the red corner, and those are the teams. They go through this, and they pull out, you know, and they're all empty, and it gets to Yoda Norpol, and those two are fighting each other. And right away, on the line, after this fight's over with, I'll tell you this right now. The only talk that happened on the fight forums was this rigged? Did they want to make sure that the two ties were not meeting in the championship? Everybody felt that way. Like, the whole fight forum, that was the main thing that you saw over and over and over. Was this show rigged in a way where those two had to fight each other? They go out there. Norpol is clear. Over and over, he says he didn't want to fight Jotun Clyde. Of all the people, it's the only guy who, because Yoda at least speaks a little bit of English, where Norpol doesn't speak that much English. And when I trained at the gym, I probably trained at the gym the first time was in, it must have been, no, the second time. The second time I went, because it was after the Ultimate Fighter. So the first time I went to Thailand was 2007. And then the second time I went was like 2010. So it was after it. And I met Norpol. And he could speak a couple things to me in English. But Jotun Clyde's English was pretty clear. And I remember like having full conversations with Jotun Clyde. And I remember thinking, man, that must have been really tough for him in the show, because he speaks almost no English. And very rarely do you have him say anything on the show. They just kind of show him doing things jokingly. So he didn't want to be on the show without Jotun Clyde there. But they ended up fighting. In the fight, Norpol's playing the game. To me, I thought their pace was pretty good. I thought they were kicking pretty, you know, pretty strong. Jotun Clyde's looking for his moments. Then one of Norpol's kicks comes up and gets Jotun Clyde in the eye. You can see him blinking. The moment that happens, Jotun Clyde just goes beast mode and goes after Norpol, and he pretty much scores a KO, like, very shortly afterwards. Scores 2 down, gets KO. Then afterwards, they hug, and the fight's over with. And Norpol is gone. But after it's over with, there were a couple things that came up. One, as I mentioned before, people kept saying, was this rigged? And I wasn't there. I don't know if there was some edits, because clearly they can edit, you know, between reaching over for that drawer. And they could say, okay, we're going to do it this way. Because reality TV, now that I'm older and I've seen it, it's they pick things. They pick and choose. They move things. And it's not really reality. It's controlled reality. So there is an opportunity that they could have done this. And I could see TV-wise how they would not want Jotun Clyde versus Norpol. I can understand that. As far as did they tell Norpol to take a dive, that's another one. Was Norpol supposed to take a dive? When I was at their gym, some people, they were trying to decide who they thought was the strongest at Fairtex. And I remember there was a couple from Sweden, and they said, Norpol's the strongest. And I said, I don't think he's the strongest. I was like, Jotun Clyde won the contender, and he beat Norpol. And they were like, yeah, well, we heard that Norpol was told to take a dive and let Jotun Clyde win. And then I was like, well, that should tell you that Jotun Clyde is the strongest, because if he wasn't, they would have told him to take a dive and Norpol would have won. But again, it was just something that we played with and we laughed and we joked about. But that was a real big thing in the fight forums. Who was legit? Was it Norpol? Was it Norpol really in a fight with Jotun Clyde and he lost fair and square? Or was Norpol told to take a dive? And on top of it, were these guys forced to go against each other despite how the drawers were pulled out? Did they really draw each other that early in the show? Nevertheless, Jotun Clyde gets a stoppage and moves on. We move to episode number 10. Episode number 10, Yodes got a patch over his eye. And, of course, Mr. All Jokes, because that's how Zadoff gets down. He says that Yodes and Clyde is a pirate, the pirate of Fairtex. Where there's a really great line where Yodes says, "Pirate, what is this? I don't know." It's just so great because he has no idea they're calling him this pirate. And it was fun to watch the back and forth there. Again, just a cool, fun moment in the gym. We then get John Wayne Parr's return. Comes back and says, "Hey, I heard you guys do Muay Thai here." And they Soren has this really cool moment where he walks him over and he gives him his bracelet. They put it in by one of the ropes in the gym that they train at. And I just thought that it was a cool moment. And it leads us to the fight with Sean versus UK. So they pull their drawers and they both get the little red doll, the red and the blue doll. They're fighting. The thing I like about the fight right away is the body work Sean put into play before he got the stoppage. UK, as I mentioned before, he's the oldest guy in the house. He's 36 years old. That means UK is 46 right now. So when they go in there, Sean comes out and he does a good job of the first shot he throws, like real early on, he throws a left hook to the body. That's the first punch that he throws in the round. And he focused on the body shot throughout. He's got really good low kick endurance. And this is something that I've mentioned on the podcast before. Low kicks, the way your leg takes them, it's not created equal. Some people can take them stronger than others. That's just how it's always going to be. And he was really, really strong, able to take the offense, able to add his own offense, add his own low kick game. So not only did he have UK hurt with body punches, but he also hurt him with the low kicks. So he's able to score a knockdown after a flurry. Flurry with the body shot, and UK goes down. UK gets up again. Sean Wright puts together some offense, scores a low kick, gets a low kick stoppage, his second low kick stoppage in the tournament. And that also takes away from something I mentioned earlier. And I let it off the hook. When Martinez lost to Sean Wright early in the second episode, he said, "Man, to come this far and to lose to a cramp." In my mind, I was like, "Dude, that's not a cramp." And I remember on the forums, everybody was going crazy that he said it was a cramp. They're like, "Dude, you lost by low kick. You got kicked to the leg, and you were no longer able to continue." He's like, "It's not like you didn't have fluids in you, and then all of a sudden that back part of your leg started to affect you, and you couldn't fight anymore. You were kicked in until you couldn't fight anymore." So a lot of people went crazy on the forums when that happened. So when Sean Wright won a second time with low kicks, people were like, "Give Sean his due. Sean can freaking fight." And I was definitely impressed by Sean. Sean, I thought, was... Now, talk about a little bit as we go into the, you know, the next episode that I want to talk about. As we go into episode number 11, Sean had become a star. Of the people on the show, I think Sean Wright was the person that no one knew anything about, that they left the show thinking, "That kid Sean Wright's pretty good." And I thought Sean Wright, potential-wise, I thought he could have been K1 Max kind of regular. Like, I thought that he had a good style and a good look, and he was young. I was surprised that he didn't have a long career in K1, like that they wouldn't have snatched him up, because he seemed so perfect for them. Now, for all I know, he wanted to do Muay Thai. For all I know, he had visa troubles. But after he got the victory over UK, so many people were sold on his skill set for more than just Muay Thai. They thought he could have really done something in kickboxing. So the episode 11 starts with them talking about Sean and his success, and then they are bored, so they all start pranking each other. And then we have people talking about Zadoff because he's the smallest guy in the house, so he's just eating whatever he wants. He's living young, and he's like, you know, everything's got syrup or sugar in it, and he's got bad eating habits. And I remember John Wayne Parr talking about how he's like, I don't think I've ever seen him eat anything that didn't have sugar in it. And I just thought that was fun. But anyways, they start doing the Y crew and you know, the Wat Ramui, and John Wayne Parr talks about how he does his, and Zadoff has the fireball, and they had a really good moment, like in the ring before they fought, where John Wayne Parr found, you know, a moment to kind of do his gun, because he always does the gunshot, and he gets it off, and then at the very end, Zadoff does the march all the way over, and he uses the blade and he cuts him. So it's pretty cool to watch. Like, in the episode, everybody had fun with their Y crews. Sean Wright and the fireball, Yost and Clyde and the arrow, like they did, you know. Of course, John Wayne Parr's got a real long one where he's got, you know, big hip thrust and does the gunshot. So They go into the fight, and Zadoff is trying his best, but Yoch, the Bajawan part, is just so much bigger and stronger than Zadoff is that nothing that Zadoff does matters. But the thing that won everybody over was Zadoff, and Zadoff was also a regular on the kickboxing forums. He was posting in K1 fans, and I remember him talking about, you know, watch this episode, hype the episode up, everybody watch this, and then afterwards you see that he just keeps going down, goes down to a body shot, goes down to a head kick, goes down to boxing, and he just pops right back up, and he's just down to fight. I think he probably went down maybe 7-8 times before they finally stopped it. Some of them that they get 10 counts, some of them that they didn't. But in the end, they were like, this guy is a warrior, and they really respected his heart, and they really respected that he kept getting up. But in the end, he gets stopped in the third round. After he gets stopped, he said something, and I remember it stuck with me. He said, I wish I could have fought 5 rounds. And the reason why that means something to me is because that takes me back to even the Rocky movie. In the Rocky movie, he says, I just want to go the distance, because if I go the distance, it proves I'm not a bum, in the first Rocky movie. In that way, I look at this and I go, Zadoff is going against one of the best guys in the world. Because at the time, Jalen Power was, as far as full rules Muay Thai goes, as a middleweight, he was considered one of the best on the planet. And, you know, definitely in everybody's top 10, if you will, as far as that weight class. And you look at him and you look at what he accomplished and you looked at how strong he was, and Zadoff getting in there, it's like, if I go the distance, I can tell people, man, I was in there with the champ, and he didn't knock me down. Zadoff did everything in his power to get those rounds in, but he was just too strong. And I remember, it's something that I heard when I was in Thailand, when Thai fight was getting popular. The guys were getting in there against world-class Thais, and they were just getting, you know, smashed all the time, and just losing by KO, and then Thai fight just kind of became a showcase for the elite Thais to kill Western guys. And then I was like, man, I don't want to see that forever. Like, they need to give me a different product. But in the end, it was agreed that this show was all about these guys just wanted the opportunity to see if they can go the distance. And in that way, Zadoff wanted to go the distance. And, you know, there's a pride that people have in who they fight, and that they want the distance. That means something to a lot of guys. So it's, you know, like I said, it comes from the Rocky movie, that kind of mentality. But when Zadoff got in there, and the reason why he kept getting up, even though he was taking, you know, a beating, it's because his heart wouldn't let him. He wanted to go the distance. He wanted to fight someone, and he kept throwing offense as hard as he could because John Wayne was too strong. But even though John Wayne was physically stronger than him, John Wayne couldn't control how much Zadoff's heart wouldn't fight back. And Zadoff fought to the very end, but John Wayne was too strong. John Wayne Parr moves on. Zadoff leaves the show. We go into episode 12, and they're missing Zadoff right away because he sells himself. He did a great job of having people into the action and, you know, joking and keeping the crowd good. It was a lot of fun. So they missed him. Then they talked about fighting friends because a lot of them had known each other beforehand, and it's just part of the sport that they would get into it. So we're in episode 12. They're all just talking about how it's going to happen. Now, some period of time, you're going to have to fight your best friend. Just how the game is. And then it is announced that Jabba is going to fight Soren. And this worked for Soren because Soren was glad that he didn't have to fight John Wayne Parr, because, as I mentioned before, they were friends. So he wanted to do, fight someone different. So when he knew he was fighting Askarov, all he had to do was prepare. He came out and he said something extremely interesting. He said, Jabbar is good at punching, but he's not a good boxer. He said, but I wouldn't say at boxing. And I thought it was really interesting because that is actually a true statement. There are people who can find a big power punch, but to do what you see a Errol Spence Jr. does, or what you see a Lomachenko do, to be able to touch someone and move and play angles and play counters, that's something that's boxing. And I thought Soren did a good job of diagnosing it. With that said, he still went in there with the killer, and it did not go his way that night. They did some weak crew practice, as I mentioned before. It came up again where Jamie came in and she was learning. So Jamie's going to learn a weak crew, and she's going to take a bit of all the fighters. She took the fireball, she took the arrow from Yotsen Klai, she took the gun from John Wayne Parr, and she kind of mixed it all up. And they kind of took her through it. So it was pretty cool. And after she was, you know, done, and she kind of opened the show with that, Askarov gets what's considered the KO of the tournament. Like, he got the big KO, the probably the most notable KO on the TV show, and especially how dramatized they made it. But they go into the action, and, you know, Soren's playing the game, doing his thing as he does, but Soren did what, you know, what we call a tell. He gave away what he was trying to do early, and Askarov read it. So afterwards, I remember Soren said that he thought that, man, it was a lucky punch, but I'm going to be back. The reason why I didn't feel like that it was a lucky punch was because I could see what I believe Askarov saw. To that point, Soren had only been playing teeps, body kicks, high kicks, long boxing. He'd been playing a distance game. Then all of a sudden, he does the tie march to position himself to throw a knee. Once he did that, if you've ever watched Jabba fight before, Jabba thinks to start loading up on overhand rights. Because once you start going knees, you're now going to get yourself close enough to a range where he can hit you. So I watched him. He stepped back when he saw the knees go, but he didn't step all the way. He didn't retreat. Like, retreat, he didn't reset. He just stepped back when he saw the knee, the steps coming for the knee. And then he allowed Soren to work his way in. Soren started a combo, and there was a knee on the end of the combo, and then he landed the first big shot. He landed it and landed a flurry, and he scores a knockdown. So you could see that before the end came, Soren was already in bad shape. Soren gets up, he starts to battle back a little bit, and then Askarov lands with a just huge right hand. The angle of it for the camera was just huge, like lifted the legs off the ground because it's in slow motion. Soren is out. They over-dramatized Soren being on the ground. They made it seem like he'd been killed. But, like, it was just a big-time shot, big-time KO. Soren was able to get up. And as I mentioned before, he got out of there. He talked to his mom, and she was super loving on the phone and said that she missed him, and there she was proud of him. But Askarov got a big KO, and it meant a lot to him because, as I said before, he felt like he lost the first fight. So this was a good bounce-back fight. So he gets the fight. All right, gets the win. He moves on, and so now we do the semifinals. We've got episode 13. The entire quarterfinals were all stoppages. So as far as selling your brand, that's what you want to happen. You had your earlier fights for the first round, and then your second round fights before you get to the semis. Those are all stoppages. So everybody has seen these fighters perform at a very high level and do really good stuff. So the fight is announced for Sean Wright to go against Yoetsen Klei. This is how you know Yoetsen Klei is that deal. He says, when the fight's announced, he says, I will knock him out for sure. That's the first thing that's announced. They go, they get suits made, they have fun kind of doing the suit thing. And then Jaume Parra says the joke after he sees himself, you know, in the suit looking all good. And he says, man, he says, if I was a female and I see me, I think I'd do myself. Jaume Parra, that's why we love you. You got the jokes. They're eating food afterwards, and Jabba Askarov gets frustrated with trying to use his fork. He then puts it on the side and just starts peeling the chicken away with his hands, and he says, fish, chicken, and a woman, these three things I take with my hands. So they were spitting the good quotes in this episode, episode number 13. So we move on to Yoetsen Klei talking about getting ready to fight Sean, and he's just spitting gem after gem. He says, I am not UK. And he says, I'm not, you know, Martinez. He says, let's see how Sean goes up against the real deal. When he says that, I was like, dude, this guy's legit. And he said, John Wayne goes, man, I think it'll be a fun fight. And he says, everyone will be excited before we get in the ring. They'll want to see what's going to happen in the ring. Once it starts, it won't be that exciting. I'm telling you, Yoetsen Klei was sending the daggers. He was saying some crazy stuff. So we go into the fight, and Yode is just better than Sean. Now, Sean's game, he wants to battle back, but Yoetsen Klei just starts battering away with the left leg. This time, he's focused on the low kick a lot, too. So he's beating Sean at where Sean was having success. He gets the body kick in, he gets the low kick, and then after if I remember correctly, he's faking the left leg, and it gets him positioned closer. He then shoots a lead uppercut, and that scores the first down on Sean. Sean gets in trouble after that knockdown. He closes the distance, I think in round two, and he scores another uppercut, and Sean is gone. And all the KOs, for whatever reason, the ref feels like he has the count to 10. I don't know if he's told to do that, but and a lot of these guys were clearly out. They didn't need to do that. Yost and Clyde proved to be the stronger. He moves on to the finale. We then move to episode 14, where Janeway Parr and Askarov were doing a video diary. They were all kind of given cameras, and they're going around the house, and they're doing kind of like a review of the entire episode. It's done pretty well, where they talk about this is this fighter, this is who they were, this is what they did, this is how they competed, this is who they fought for, this is who they were to me. And I thought they did a really good job of that. They go into the fight, and it is a really close fight between Askarov and Janeway. Askarov, again, he lands. If he can't land his overhand right, and there are a couple times where Askarov is, he's really down to bang it out. So if you're starting to win and you're scoring a lot on Askarov, he'll, like, pump his chest or he'll nod his head, and then he'll just start throwing some power hooks at you. He really did do a good job of playing his position. When a kick came, if he was able to catch it and throw John Wayne Prowl on the ground, he did it. If he could get a dump, he would get it, because that was his number one way of scoring. John Wayne was able to score because he's way bigger. He's able to score with his kick offense, with his boxing offense, and he too was able to get dumps. But he had gaps because of the younger athletic guy. He wasn't consistent in his offense throughout, and I think that's what made the fight close. That's what helped the dumps get him closer, get Askarov closer in the fight. Then after that was said and done, they go to the scorecards, and by 1 point, Janeway Parr wins a very close fight. Askarov was heartbroken. He was crying. He said he really wanted to win it for his dad, but at the same time, he had made himself a star. No one knew who Askarov was before this. No one knew who Sean Wright was before this, but I think Askarov took it, went even further than Sean did, fought for K-1, fought all over the world. He had had people fall in love with him, and I mentioned this once before. I went to watch Cosmo Alexander fought Giorgio Petrosian in Italy, and I went to that show. When I was at that show, Askarov was on the card, and the only person to get a cheer that was anywhere close to as much as Giorgio Petrosian's cheer was Askarov. That many people knew him from the show, and that was in Italy. So Askarov was very, very beloved. He got the win on that particular night, but in this night, he was heartbroken because he didn't get to, you know, move on and fight for $150,000. And, you know, he really wanted to do it for his dad, and just didn't go his way that night. But he put on a great show. Your final, Janeway Parr versus Yost and Clyde. We go to the final show. Now, there are a couple of shows, there are a couple of fights that were victories that not a lot of people know about. For example, Soren beat Sean Wright in the undercard. I mean, it was a full card. But there were three fights that were aired. Zach Kahn gets a victory over Zidoff, and I'm telling you, when you get to see it for five rounds, you see just how good he is. He can really play the game. Zach Kahn is so crafty. Like, he is such a crafty, skilled kickboxer. He scored a lot of really cool offense. He had Zidoff hurt with the low kicks. Zidoff had a couple moments in the fourth round, I remember particularly, where he was able to bat down in the mouthpiece and throw a lot of offense, but he just couldn't keep up with the rhythm of Zach Kahn. And Zach caught him with a hook left elbow when he was throwing. So he did like a leaping left elbow while Zidoff was throwing a left hook, and it caught him clean. It busted his nose up. And then in the fifth round, he was probably game to go. I think Akuma could have made it to the distance. Zidoff's a tough guy. He probably could have made it the last minute. But he had taken several offensive shots in a row. He took a lot of left hooks, and then they just decided to call it while he was taking those big shots. But I mean, nothing to be ashamed of. I thought you fought really good. I just think that Zach Kahn in front of that home crowd, because the last episode, I mean, they went all out. They brought in Mike Civello and Mike Castagnini. Those were, of course, that was the broadcasting team in Australia who did so many, you know, Evolution shows and so many of the high-level Muay Thai shows in Australia. They came in, and they were the broadcast team for the live show at the very end. So Zach Kahn in front of the crowd, and they cheered like crazy for him. He had a good win over the hometown crowd. Askarov then fights Rafiq, and it was a fight of two tails. Askarov landing his power hooks, getting his low kick game going. He's got a good low kick. And then all of a sudden, in round four, Rafiq just crafty, able to score offense, able to get sweeps, able to get, not necessarily sweep that got Askarov on the ground, but got him off balance. He's able to score his boxing. He's able to score his elbows. And then it seemed like round five, Askarov, who's the aggressive guy, he was on the retreat, and he was getting walked down. So I would have called it 48-47 for Askarov, But I'm telling you, if there's one thing that I learned about the show, despite the fact that Rafiq was talking and the fact that more people remember Rafiq for how he acted more so than how he fought, he was good, man. That kid could fight. Rafiq was bringing it. And he just wasn't able to get his hands raised. And Askarov wins. We move on to the final fight after the whole show is over with. 10 years from 4 days ago now. Yotsen Klai gets a victory over John Wayne Parr. It was a fast start for John Wayne Parr, who got into his offensive flurries right away. He was determined to throw in boxing flurries, because the thing that got him caught in the first fight was he played the game a little bit, and Yotsen Klai went with a fake head kick, closed the distance through a real head kick, scored it down, had John Wayne Parr in trouble. John Wayne took some bad shots for two straight rounds in a row, recovered later in that fight, but the damage was done. The knockdown had done it. Yotsen Klai became your first WBC champion at 20 years old. In this show, John Wayne Parr gets the fast start. Yo wades it. He's looking to counter in between. And then all of a sudden, John Wayne Parr throws a combo. He's off balance, and he bails sideways. What I mean by bailing sideways is when you try to escape an exchange, and your hip is facing your opponent. And he bailed sideways, and a left hand came over and dropped him. I believe it was a left hand for the first. No, it was a right hand. Right hook came over, scored over the top, and that's what got the first down. He was in trouble, but he got out of that round. So we go to round number two. And again, John Wayne Parr is looking to score in bunches, looking to throw the flurries. And Yotes showing good defense and looking for his counters in between. But then I thought that despite it, John Wayne Parr was still scoring. Like sometimes the right hand would score in the end of the flurry. Maybe he'd throw five shots and maybe one would get through. Or he'd throw eight shots and two would get through. But he was just going to keep throwing. Volume, volume, volume. Then all of a sudden, Yotsen Klai was landing in power. At the end of the second round, he does a teep. And then after the teep, he fakes the teep and drops a straight left hand, drops John Wayne again. John Wayne's game, he's able to get back up. Tough guy, he takes some big shots, but he gets through the round. We get to round four, and early round five, John Wayne Parr is just battling back, trying his best to get back in the fight, trying his best to get the numbers on the board. The commentary saying, hey, you're not winning with the boxing, you've got to do something big. Get in the clinch, try to win with knees, try to score an elbow. Which I've never felt was John Wayne Parr's game, but they're saying that that's what they would have recognized or recommended him. But John Wayne Parr, at the end of the fight, tried his best to get back into it. Just game, strong guy, kept battling, but Yotsen Klai scored another big shot at the end of the round, had John Wayne Parr in trouble as they went to the end of the fight. Yotsen Klai gets the victory. He is your champion of the contender. They had a belt for him, $150,000. Later, I'd talked to him down the road, or I'd seen him down the road, said that he uses the money, got his mom a house, and him and his brother were opening a gym, and everything changed for him. So I was really, really happy for him. So that is the breakdown of the Contender Asia. I'm going to tell you guys a couple things that you didn't know about the show. Number one, it was a failed USA attempt. After the show had its success, 2 years later, for whatever reason, they decided that they were going to try to do it again. I cannot remember the channel that was on. Like, I was trying to find it real quick because I was looking. I was like, man, nope, I do remember. It was Versus. It was on Versus was the channel that they played it on the U.S. When it was in Australia, it was on Fox 8. And I can't remember the Asian channels it was on. I can't remember those specifically, but I will remember that they tried to put it in the U.S. on Versus. And at the time, they had WEC, and they had UFC shows every once in a while. So they were all about putting on a TV product that was based out, for men or for combat sports. So then they put this out. And the first episode had really good ratings. And then the second episode, less ratings. And the third, even less than that. And then it just disappeared. Like, at the very end, they would play on their website. They would put the videos up, and you could watch it on, like, kind of like YouTube. And you could watch it on the website, and they took it off the TV. So people were like, man, how did it fail? And I remember I realized just how much of a fight junkie I was, because one of the MMA podcasts that I listened to, they talked about how, people would call in and say, what's this, Contender Asia show with Muay Thai? And, Jordan Breen was the host of that show. He'd already seen it. So he's like, yeah, it's definitely worth watching and definitely check it out. The reason why it didn't have success in America is because it was on YouTube. So once people realized that they could just watch it all the way through and not have to wait for a weekly, they did so. So for the people who wanted to watch it and didn't want to have to wait, they had access to it. For the people that wanted to wait, their group grew smaller and smaller, so eventually it did not have that much success. They tried to play it in the U.S. 2 years after it had already aired, and 2 years or a year and a half after it already aired live in 2008 from January 16th to April 23rd. They tried to do it well after it had been announced. The winner was out there. Everybody, the winners were all moved on to fight other careers. It didn't work out. So if you didn't know it, it failed in the U.S. Another thing, it was advertised towards women. Because a lot of the guys were young, Sean Wright and Askarov and Johnny Park, there's a reason why they were doing stuff like getting suits and going to the club, and there was a time where they all got their haircuts done. Because the show was aimed at women. A lot of people didn't know that. Not saying that it was specifically aimed at women, but the places where you could find its commercial or where you could find advertisements for it were in places where, you know, women would buy products or where TV shows that women would watch. Like, they put the commercial up. And the way that Japan had a lot of their advertisement aimed at Masato, because the girls love Masato, they were doing that with the brand. So a lot of people didn't know, but it was really advertised for women, for Asia and the Oceania area. Ole Larsen was supposed to be in the show instead of Zadoff. I mentioned that before. Larsen was one of the first people that was, introduced to the show, first people who they talked about, being on the first cast. I can't remember what happened. I don't think it was contractual. It probably was an injury, or maybe he got sick or something, but Ole Larsen wasn't able to do the show. He knew Zadoff, and that's how Zadoff was recommended for the show. The second season never aired. So right now I can tell you that the winner of the second season was Artem Levin, and it never got on TV. Like, they ran it, they put the work in, and people were excited for it. They wanted to see it again, but just for whatever reason, whether it was TV deal, and then Barnett, of course, it's a thing with TV guys. People who start shows and TVs, they'll do it for like 2 years and then just leave it. But it's really, really strange that it only went one season, because it was really, really beloved. And everybody watched it every week. And I thought that it was something that I would be experiencing for at least 6-7 years before it came to an end. But they just couldn't recreate that fire after the first year. And when the TV deal didn't happen, the money didn't happen. It was filmed and not shown. So I don't even know. Hopefully out there one day I'll find the video of the entire season of season two, but it never got out there. As I mentioned before, they were there for longer than 2 months in the house. Again, it was trial and error. That's too damn long to have anybody in there for filming. They could have sped that up, but they were in the house way longer than you would be in The Ultimate Fighter. Another thing I'll mention is there were several attempts to recreate it. Infusion had their own version of it. I remember Sam Brown was one of the coaches on that show. Drago Gago was on that show. He was the winner of the first one. Shane Campbell was on there. Ponsiuk was on there. Like, they tried to do it, and they even tried to recreate things like the challenge. And I remember they had this thing where it just wasn't executed well at all. But they all had like their flags, and it was outside. And I remember them saying, "I will honorably, be the captain for my team." And it just didn't come off well at all. It was a great advertisement for the the Super Pro Custom Wii Gym, because all of them were filmed there. And some of the later episodes produced some high-level stars. Amon Barlow, high-level star in kickboxing, the big-time upset victory, and then, of course, tournament win for Anissa Mexen. They really did have a lot of great fighters emerge from it. I remember Daniel Sam won one of the tournaments, and they did a good job with it, and they had it on for more seasons than the Contender Asia, but those were very hard to get to. They weren't shown on a regular basis. The forum world wasn't what it was before, so it was starting to slip off a little bit as Twitter and Facebook and other things, other media outlets or social media outlets became more popular. It kind of went away. So shout out to them for their work and what they put in, but in the end, it didn't work for Infusion as far as having the entire Muay Thai and kickboxing community gravitate towards it. They knew about it, but not the way that they were in love with the Contender. Another version, Challenger. Challenger was another version of the Contender Asia. It had Cyrus Washington, Jordan Watson, Mart Zhou, who was a Thai stylist who fought in Australia many times. Antoine Pinto was on there. So the Antoine Pinto that you guys see in Glory Kickboxing. Jesse Miles was on there. Marco Piquet, Frank Giorgi, Vasil Kalasa, for those who are, he was a regular in the Muay Thai scene in the 2000s. And Michael Corley from the U.S., they did all right with their show. They did a good job of getting, good athletes on it. But I'm telling you, it had no buzz. And in the way that I can sit down and watch all the Contender Asias on YouTube right now, I can't sit down and watch all of the Challengers. They just didn't do a good job of getting their fights out there to everybody. And it's unfortunate because they really did have a good roster and some good fights. After that, another thing you guys probably didn't know, or probably some of you did know, many of these guys fought again after they were done. So Yotsen Klai, Downwind Par, Rafiq, Yotsen Klai and Downwind Par fought again down the road. And I mentioned before, I thought that Yotsen Klai won that fight 4-1. But Yotsen Klai, definitely, I thought that Downwind Par had the argument for the 5th round. And he'd go on to win it. And at that time, I mentioned you guys before, when Preacher had said that Yotsen Klai could be a lazy fighter, when I was in Thailand, I mentioned that I witnessed there are some times where he was on form and pushing it, and sometimes where he was like, nah. So I think that there was some truth to that. And later, I was at that gym, and they were like, hey, man, if you don't go out there and work hard, you're going to have to drop Downwind Par to get a decision out there. And Yod just went out there and was Yod, and he didn't get the decision, and he just went on to the next fight because he did what he wanted to do. He took care of his mom, and at the time, him and his brother were trying to get his gym started. So, but Downwind, they fought. Bruce Preacher McPhee and Downwind Par was a big deal fight in Australia, and it happened twice. And Downwind won both fights, and he scored knockdowns in both fights. But down the road, they fought again, and Bruce Preacher McPhee got a victory over Downwind Par. And you saw that a lot throughout the show. Some of those guys met and fought because I think Evolution did the best job of it. Because Contender was so popular, they just kept trying to make fights with guys from the Contender and, put them, because the crowd knew who they were. So Downwind Par used that to get some opportunities. He fought Sean Wright, one of them. And Sean Wright was super sick, and I remember he got stopped in the stool. But shout out to him for taking the fight anyways. Soren had gotten, some opportunities to fight guys who were on the Contender before. And I thought they did a really good job. Like, as I remembered, I thought they did a good job of that area building on the success that those athletes had throughout the year. So definitely shout out to them. As I mentioned before, they questioned Zach being on the show, but afterwards, people loved Zach. He became a DJ. He, again, talked on the fight forums. Now we flash forward to today. Askarov still out there fighting, making a check, because he's still, 30 years old now? Because we're, 10 years removed from that. And Downwind Par still doing it. He's 41 years old. He lost about a month ago because he fought on Bellator Kickboxing, but they've got him on a long-term contract, so they're going to bring him in again. He's trying to get his 100th victory. It's funny because I remember when he came up upon his 100th fight and how proud he was of fighting 100 times. Now he's going to be proud of having 100 wins to his name. So shout out to him. And Yotsen Klai, the winner of the tournament. We just talk about how great this guy is. Yotsen Klai, it is 2018. Yotsen Klai was 22 years old when he won the Contender. Here we are 10 years later, so he's 32 years old. Yotsen Klai has won 27 straight fights. And he hasn't lost since 2011. And he's dealt with injuries, and he's been working hard. And I remember he got a strength and conditioning coach for a little bit, started doing CrossFit. His abs came into play for a little bit. He just stayed with it. And he's going to be fighting on the ONE Fighting Championships, hopefully getting a pretty good check there. They're doing a good job of giving these high-level fighters opportunities. They really are. And I am super excited to see them continue to work hard and get their name out there. I'm excited for guys like Sean Wright, for all you guys that are listening to this podcast. And I'll say your names one more time. Rafiq Bakuri, Norpol Fairtex, Bruce Zapriser McPhee, David Piquet, Alan Sylvester, Zidoff Dominic, Jakimi UK, Carlson, Sean Wright, Trevor Smadage, Zach Kahn, James Martinez, Jabra Askarov, P2 Sands, Soren Mongtong, Mongkantong, Yostin Clive Fairtex, and John Wayne Parr. You guys, you did something special, like something that hasn't been recreated since. The buzz that happened around that podcast was, or around that TV show, that is the basis of my podcast. It's something that I want to live, and I want this generation to be able to experience. So this podcast is my tribute to you guys and what you did in the kickboxing and Muay Thai world 10 years ago, when everybody was going to the computer once a week to see who would get the episode first, upload it so that we could all watch it all over the world and discuss it. So thank you to the athletes who are a part of that. Thank you guys all for listening to my podcast. This is the longest podcast I've done in a really, really long time. So thank you for your patience. Continue to listen to it. Continue to follow kickboxing and Muay Thai. That's what you're going to get on this podcast. If you want me to do interviews, nobody's really, you know, mentioned me. I haven't done an interview in a long time. I usually just do results, and I do like little cool stories like this. If you like this style of story, if you want me to go revisit a fight card, if you want to go revisit a fight event, or like another moment in Muay Thai and kickboxing, like the Contender Asia, just go ahead and find me on Twitter at Stephen the Warman, and I'd be grateful to be a part of that and help you out with that. So thank you all for listening to my podcast. Thank you to the men who made this show special. Another thank you to Jamie Ong and Stefan Fox for their contributions to the show. It was a lot of fun. Thank you for listening to my podcast. Peace, everyone. Have a good one. And get on YouTube and watch all the Contender Asia.